For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The White House has confirmed US President Donald Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin had a second, previously undisclosed meeting at the G20 earlier this month in Germany. President Trump has used Twitter to describe media claims of a secret dinner as fake news. Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Bahrain and Egypt say they've backed down from 13 demands tabled to Qatar. Instead, they now want Qatar to accept 6 broad principles, which include commitments to combating terrorism and ending provocation. Qatar denies fostering terror and instability in the region. Plans to cut the French military budget have caused the head of the country's armed forces to quit. The government of President Emmanuel Macron has laid out a string of major cuts. Jack Parrock reports.
General Pierre de Villiers has resigned his position as the head of the French armed forces, saying President Macron's cuts will mean the military doesn't have the durability to ensure France's protection. The president says he's not tolerating any dissent from the military and says holding debates of this nature in the public arena is not dignified.
Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's demanding answers about why Minneapolis police shot dead a Sydney woman, Justine Damond. Arthur Stevens has more.
Mr. Turnbull says he cannot for the life of him understand how a woman out in the street in her pyjamas seeking assistance from police can be shot like that. He says his government is demanding answers. Australia's push for information comes amid a suggestion by investigators that the Minneapolis police officers involved may not be offering full and early assistance. Mr. Turnbull was adamant when he spoke with Australia's Nine Network.
Our hearts go out to her family and all of her friends and loved ones.
As Sydneysiders gathered for a dawn vigil organised by Ms. Damond's family, a new theory has emerged that fireworks may have sparked the shooting. Mr. Turnbull says Australia's Consul General is supporting the family while seeking answers. Arthur Stevens, Melbourne.
The BBC's unveiled a list of salaries paid to key stars, revealing a major gender imbalance. The highest paid employee is broadcaster Chris Evans. Catherine Drew reports.
Chris Evans was paid at least $2.8 million by the BBC last year for his radio and TV presenting duties. He far out-earns the other presenters at the top of the list, Match of the Day's Gary Lineker and Graham Norton, who hosts his own Friday night entertainment show, among other duties. The corporation published the earnings of its top 96 stars as part of its annual report. It shows of the 96, only a third are women, and the top 7 are all male. The list includes actors, presenters, journalists, and others who were paid over $195,000 in the last financial year. The BBC opposed making the list public, but was forced to do so as part of its new 11-year charter negotiated with the government.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And thank you very much, Ollie Barrett, and good evening to you. It's Wednesday. Thunder is on the way here in Greater Manchester. Thunder, rain, lightning and all of that. We've a good show lined up for you this Wednesday. Tweet at Richie Allen Show right now to join in, or email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Sophia Smallstorm and Wayne Madsen are my guests today. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Alrighty.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, Sophia Smallstorm, amazing woman, terrific writer, researcher and filmmaker, joins us in the second hour. Chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides flourished after the Second World War. The result of that was the dousing of global soil with so much toxin that soil has lost soil biome, which is the huge diversity of bacteria in the soil. What are the implications of that for our health, for our gut, for our guts, our collective guts? And how is that linked to the transhumanist agenda? Don't miss Sophia Smallstorm in the second hour. And joining me this hour, live from DC, Wayne Madsen is back on the programme. Terrific intelligence expert is Wayne. He's a journalist and author. Also, we'll be talking about, well, the 9/11 survivors who have written to Theresa May asking that she publish the terror funding report, which the Home Secretary Amber Rudd said recently won't be published. So some 9/11 survivors writing to the UK government asking to publish that report because they believe it leads to Saudi Arabia. We'll talk with Wayne about that and the latest on the Russian even hacking saga and Donald Trump's extra, would you say, his extra meeting with Vladimir Putin at the G20. All of that with Wayne Madsen a little bit later this hour. We're live on davidicke.com/headlines on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, of course, and TuneIn Radio as well. BBC salaries. BBC salaries. All the rage on the media today. The BBC, as you might know, was ordered by the UK government to disclose to the public who pays, it should be said, for the BBC through the mandatory television licence. The BBC ordered to disclose the names of those who earn over £150,000 a year. Can't imagine. The presenters were thrilled about it. Saw some video of BBC Two presenter and election night presenter Jeremy Vine being accosted by a mine worker about his salary, asking him, was he embarrassed to pick up his hefty salary? Vine wasn't too impressed with that. Chris Evans topped the list of the best paid stars at the BBC. He made between £2.2 and £2.25 million in 2016-2017. Claudia Winkleman, the highest paid female celebrity, earning between £450,000 and £500,000. You see, this is what's wrong with the corporate media. To think of music radio presenters and entertainment presenters like Chris Evans and Claudia Winkleman as celebrities. They're not fucking celebrities. They're presenters. I swore I wouldn't get annoyed reading this story. And it's not about the money. I don't blame these idiots for the money they get. I blame those who pay them. They're not celebrities. They make radio programs. That's it. Anyway, the BBC has been compelled to reveal this information, including the pay of 96 of its top stars under the terms of the new Royal Charter. Now, the total bill for the 96 personalities was £28.7 million, but the figures in the report reveal large disparities between what men and women are paid. Overall, 25 men on the talent list receive more than a quarter of £1 million a year compared to just 9 women. Now, Damien Collins, MP, is the chairman of the Culture, Media and Sport Committee. And ironically, he's going to chair an inquiry into fake news, which I've been talking about a lot. Here he is, ironically, a lot of irony today, ironically, here's Damien Collins on Sky News talking about the BBC presenter salaries.
It's about the whole corporation, and a lot of people look at that list and say there are an awful lot of people. And I think also a lot of people who work for the BBC, a lot of leading journalists will be familiar from our TV screens, who aren't on that list, who will see other people in the corporation paid quite a lot more than they are and may wonder why that's the case as well. So that's why I think it was important that this was done, that this is public money, this is licence fee payers money, and there should be some transparency over how it's being spent. But of course, for the on-screen talent, this is only a partial picture. People who work for the BBC but are paid by an independent production company, they're not included in the list. So David Dimbleby, who presents Question Time, a very familiar face for BBC viewers, that's made by an independent production company. So his salary for that programme is not included in this list. So this is only a partial picture of what people really get from programmes that are commissioned by the BBC.
And the big question is, on the basis of what you've seen so far, do you think people are overpaid?
Well, I think that the key test is, could that person do that job for another broadcaster and be paid the same amount of money? Now, I think actually for the highest paid people, the truth is they probably could, or something similar. But I think a lot of people through that list, you'd look at it and say, you know, does that salary reflect the fact they've been there a long time rather than what their real market worth would be? And as you rightly highlighted as well, there are an awful lot more men than women on that list. I think, you know, the Director General has recognised that's something that has to change. Most modern media organisations, you're used to seeing, you know, pretty much parity of men and women in leading positions in the organisation. And the BBC should be moving towards that too.
Mm. So what does Collins propose to do about situations where women are paid less for doing exactly the same job as their male counterparts?
Well, I think there are two things. So I think one thing we'll want to take up with the Director General when he appears in front of the Select Committee in the autumn is to say, well, are there cases where men and women who appear to be doing roughly the same job, the same level of responsibility, same level of exposure on screen, are they being paid the same amount, or is there a pay disparity amongst grade and role types? And then also, why is it that there seem to be more men in leading positions than women? Now, the BBC will say, well, if you look at more recent recruitment and more recent promotion, they're starting to address that balance, but there's clearly a long way to go.
Long way to go, he said. He also said he'd be bringing the Director General before a committee. How many committee interviews and hearings are the Culture, Media and Sport Committee going to have, or is the Culture, Media and Sport Committee, Sport even Committee going to have? They're going to have this fake news inquiry as well. We've been petitioning them to invite David Icke to go to the fake news inquiry. They haven't had the courtesy as of yet to respond to our emails. So the BBC Director General is a man called Tony Hall. What did Tony Hall have to say about the disproportionate numbers of female presenters on the list and pay parity? Tony Hall, Director General.
I think we've made a lot of progress, but it's nowhere near where I wanted to be, because by 2020, I want to get to the point when it is equal between men and women on our radio channels, on our television programmes as well. I think we've made some progress. And I think over the last three years anyway, 60% of the new hires we've done for all promotions we've done have been women. That's good. You see that on the 10 o'clock news, you feel that on the Today programme, which now can be sometimes just presented by women. You see it on Strictly or indeed on the new Doctor Who. But I think we've got much more to do there, and I am determined to get it right. When I first came back to the BBC, I wanted to get another woman to present the Today programme. We did it. It took a couple of months. I wanted to get our local radio stations, who at that point, 14% of their breakfast shows were presented by women. The rest were done by men. I said, I want to get to half and half in 2 years. And we got there as well.
Tony Hall, the Director General of the BBC there. A lot of coverage of this today. Listen, first of all, of course, women should be paid exactly the same for the same work rendered. That's inarguable. It's untenable for any organisation paid for by taxpayer money, licence fee money, which is the law in this country, like it or lump it. I know a lot of people in this country don't pay their television licence, and I respect that. Of course I do. But it is the law. Pay a woman the exact same amount of money, the exact same salary, I should say, for performing the exact same duty. End of story. But positive discrimination, you know, over the years, I've been involved in commercial radio for many years. Positive discrimination, I'm never in favour of it, because ultimately it's not right. You should give the anchor job, the presenting job, whether it's music, radio, whether it's news, whether it's kids' television, give it to the best person, man or woman, doesn't matter. Jesus Christ, in 2017, how hard is it to audition people and put your misogyny to one side, or put your feminism to one side and just pick the best fucking person? You're very good, you're better than him, or you're better than her, you get the job done. Anyway, why are we still talking about this stuff? Had an email today, this is true. Somebody assuming that because of my commercial media experience that I worked for the BBC. I never did. There was a time when I appeared often on BBC regional radio, doing regional reports from Ireland for a time, but I never was officially employed by the BBC, it must be said. So somebody said to me today in an email, Richie, these guys, they must be pretty good, right? You're honest, Richie. They must be really, really good to be earning that sort of money. It's like footballers, surely some of these presenters, Richie, are, you know, they're a class above. No, they're not. They're not. You watch them, you listen to them, you know they're average. You know they are glorified auto-cue readers who are being talked through programmes from the gallery, through their monitor, their in-ear monitoring. They're not a cut above the man or woman who's at Southampton Sounds Radio at 3 o'clock in the morning. They're not. I've had experience of them. I have produced high-earning presenters. You take Graham Norton, giggles like a Muppet and sticks his tongue as far up the arses of the Hollywood A-listers that he interviews on Friday nights as he can. It's insufferable. He's confident, is Graham Norton. He's fluent, no doubt. But talent? No, not in my opinion. He might be a funny stand-up comic, but there isn't anything exceptional about that to warrant the payment of £2 million to these people. There isn't. But more fool those, you know, who accept it and who pay for it. Going to leave that there. You never come off sounding anything other than envious when you talk about these presenters. But no, they are not special. And they are not a cut above or vastly more talented or superior to many, many presenters that I could name here, but I'd be here all day long. Now, Gina Miller just won't feck off. The businesswoman extraordinaire, the hedge fund manageress, is turning up on at least three shows a week to talk up the prospect of the UK not leaving the European Union. Gina Miller, in case you don't remember, took the government to the High Court successfully and forced a parliamentary vote to approve Article 50. Parliament voted accordingly and approved the triggering of Article 50. Anyway, here is Gina Miller on Sky today. Just before we hear Gina Miller, her act is pretty clever. You know, she says we must honour the referendum and proceed with, you know, leaving and making an agreement. We must follow democracy, she says. But sure, we can have another vote at the end of the negotiations. And that vote should be a ballot paper with several options on it, including remaining in the EU. But not a vote that you and I would take part in. A vote exclusively for the MPs. Listen to this madness. This is Gina Miller on Sky News Today.
From a very practical point of view, why could it not be reversed? Because it would require, as Bernard quite rightly says, the withdrawal of the notification letter and an act of parliament, and the other 27 member states to agree. They have, in effect, said we would be allowed back in. If you remember the song, the John Lennon song that was quoted by the president. And the fact is, we need to go forwards first. So I do actually think it is very destructive to now be talking about remaining. It was a democratic vote. It was supported by the MPs in Parliament. We need to go forwards to see where we end up. But at that stage, it must be logical that we vote on all options, including remaining. And at that stage, we would know if we could remain or not. I can't see how someone can say it is set in stone. One referendum sets everything in stone, because an election doesn't set everything in stone. We have other elections.
Okay, so when you say we vote, who do you mean?
I think it's got to, because we have a representative democracy. I think it's the MPs. I'm afraid I think referenda are destructive. We've seen the waves that the last one has caused. There is still division that's been caused by the last referendum. And something so vitally important, I think it should be the MPs.
Should be the MPs, eh, Gina Miller? Why doesn't Gina Miller just piss off back to wherever she came from? And no, Adam Bolton, Bunter, as Bolton is known amongst the MPs, didn't say, stop there, Ms. Miller. You want the MPs at the end of the negotiations to be in a position to reverse the referendum result and keep us in. Is that what you're saying, love? You want 600 and whatever and change MPs at the end of the negotiations to throw Brexit out the window, eh? Adam Bolton, just another Rupert Murdoch stalwart and not working for the BBC, but you can be sure he's on a six-figure salary with Sky News. That's the talent we're talking about. You see, you don't even have to think like me. You don't have to agree with me or with the opinions of the guests on the Richie Allen Show. You just have to do your fucking job. Excuse me. Do you realise what you're proposing is tantamount to tyranny? That we ignore millions of people and last year's referendum result and we allow the MPs to scupper Brexit. Bolton couldn't even do that. So ask yourself, is he worth his six-figure salary? He probably is to Rupert Murdoch and to the establishment. We'll be talking more about this with Wayne Madsen, but survivors of the 9/11 attacks have written to Theresa May, urging her to make public a British government report into the extent of Saudi Arabia's funding of Islamist extremism here in the UK. the report into the significance of the financing of Islamic extremists in Britain by Saudi Arabia and other nations was commissioned by David Cameron as part of a deal to obtain political support for a parliamentary vote on UK airstrikes on Syria. I wonder what reply the 9/11 survivors will get from May. Here's RT with this pretty important report.
This is a deeply controversial report. It was reluctantly commissioned by David Cameron back when he was Prime Minister. It's been much delayed, and it looks at how extremism in the UK is funded and supported from abroad. And what it was expected to reveal was the extent of Saudi Arabia's role in that financing. Last week, the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, said that actually they won't be publishing the report. She said, for security reasons, they have released a summary, more of an overview, really, a sort of very, very high up look at what the report has concluded. She said, though, that the government would be raising what they're calling areas of concern with specific countries. Now, we can't know which specific countries she is going to talk to, because despite concluding in this report and in the summary that some funding was coming from abroad, the summary did not say the name of any country. No country, not even Saudi Arabia. Shadow Home Secretary says that she suspects that the report has been suppressed to protect the trade and diplomatic relationships that this country has with Saudi Arabia. The Green Party says that it leaves the government open to allegations of refusing to expose the role of Saudi money in terrorism in the UK. And that, of course, is the crux of it for this group of 9/11 survivors. We know that 15 of the 19 9/11 attackers were from Saudi Arabia, but the kingdom has always denied having any role in the attacks. The victims are saying that, you know, the UK is now uniquely positioned to shed light on what they're calling Saudi Arabia's complicity in terrorism.
Yes, and more with Wayne Madsen on this shortly. Now, Paul Flynn, MP from Newport West, Labour stalwart, lovely man. I think Paul is the father of the house now, is he? It's not Dennis Skinner. It could be Dennis Skinner, actually. It might be Dennis Skinner. I should know that. I do know that, but my memory has gone blank right now. Now, Paul's a lovely guy. He's been on this programme a few times in the past. Really good guy. Paul has called on campaigners who want soft drugs legalised to come to Parliament, roll a joint and light up that spliff. Yes, he has. He told a Westminster debate on drugs policy of one occasion on which he had probably done so himself. Paul said he helped a writer and TV producer suffering from multiple sclerosis make a cup of cannabis tea on the House of Commons terrace. He's a good guy, is Paul. This is exactly what he said, Paul Flynn.
I think we have to say to those who put up with the barbaric stupidity and cruelty of government policy that denies seriously ill people their medicine of choice, we've got a call on those who are in this position to act in a way of civil disobedience. Elizabeth Bryce, when she went to the Parliament in Belgium, spoke to the Parliament in Belgium, and within months they changed their policy in that country. We know most of the countries in the world allow this most ancient of medicines, been used for 5,000 years in every continent in the world. It's used for medicinal purposes. Well, I would call on people, and I know we're not supposed to do this as members, to break the law, to come here and use cannabis here and see what happens and challenge the government, the authorities, to arrest them.
Paul Flynn, good lad. Jean Anne thinks Kenneth Clark is the father of the house. I think Jean Anne might be right. Kenneth Clark, eh? Right, moving on again. Paul Flynn is a good guy. We'll get Paul on. He's not doing so many interviews these days. I imagine he's tired, is Paul. He's been around a long time. He's an octogenarian now, is Paul. But we'll get him back on again in the near future. Now, Betsy Hodges, the mayor of Minneapolis, told the press last night that the officer who shot dead Australian woman Justine Damond won't talk. Justine was shot dead on Saturday after she called the police to report a sexual assault. The officer, Mohammed Noor, his body cam, his partner's body cam and the dash cam was switched off. Now, Mohammed Noor is the officer. He shot her from the car. He murdered Justine Damond, but he isn't talking. Presumably, his lawyer is saying, don't say a word. Here's Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges. This is a big story because this is just cold-blooded murder.
And we do have more information now, though it's frustrating to have some of the picture, but not all of it. We cannot compel Officer Noor to make a statement. I wish we could. I wish that he would make a statement, is what I want to say. We can't compel him by law, but I wish that he would make that statement. There are big questions left that we still have and that we hope to have answered soon. Why did Officer Noor draw and fire his gun? What happened from the time the officers arrived on the scene to when she was pronounced dead? Why don't we have footage from body cameras? Why were they not activated? We all want answers to those questions.
We're not going to get them anytime soon anyway. Millions of workers will have to work an extra year before retiring after the UK government announced plans to extend the retirement age to 68. 68. The state pension age had been due to rise by 1 year in 2044. It's currently 67. But David Gawke, the Work and Pensions Secretary, said the cash-saving move would be implemented from 2037, 7 years earlier than planned. Here's David Gawke.
This is about the government taking responsible action in response to growing demographic and fiscal pressures. That is why today I am announcing the government's intention to accept the key recommendation of the Crideland Review and increase the state pension age from 67 to 68 over 2 years from 2037. This brings forward the increase by 7 years from its legislated date of 2044-46, in line with the recommendation made by John Crideland and following careful consideration of the evidence on life expectancy, fairness and public finances.
Yes, what a load of nonsense. It means that if you're aged under 47 now, if you're 47 or under now, you'll have to work an extra year before you can claim your state pension. Needless to say, this has been met with criticism across the board. Debbie Abrahams, who's the Shadow Work and Pension Secretary, she said it was an astonishing continuation of austerity. She said 34 million people would have to work longer than under Labour's plans. The change, which will be brought in over 2 years, will affect everybody born between April 6th, 1970 and April 5th, 1978. So if you were born between those years, you don't retire at 67. If you are on the state pension even, you'll now have to work a year longer. Hunger Games Society. Anybody. Anybody's for a bit of Hunger Games Society. 27 minutes past the hour. And I'm going over. I didn't mean to go over. So it's time for me to take a very quick break. When I return, more to tell you. Maybe some music, maybe not. Wayne Madsen joins us live from DC. Can't wait to talk with Wayne.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Don't forget, Sophia Small Storm joins the program in the second hour. It's now 29 minutes past the hour. Going to have a little bit of music just for a wee break. When we come back from that, Wayne Madsen will join me. We'll talk about the 9/11 survivors petitioning Theresa May to publish the terror funding report. We'll also talk about the latest developments in the Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin hacking scandal and where that might all go. Bruce Springsteen. You know I love Bruce. Bit of Bruce. It's from Born in the USA, 1984's biggest album worldwide. Not, it was Thriller by Michael Jackson, in fact. But this is the best album of 1984. This is Bruce and Thriller. And I know, and Thriller. I might need another holiday. This is Darlington County from Bruce. Thriller, of course, was released in 1983. But it was 1984's biggest selling album. You know what I mean. Wonderful stuff this on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Wayne Madsen after Bruce. Yeah, in my commercial radio days, I'd be fired for doing this, cutting the track early, but I want to spend some more time with our first guest today. You know him quite well. He's an outstanding journalist, researcher, writer and broadcaster. And what he doesn't know about geopolitics and global intelligence gathering is not worth knowing. Do check him out at his website, WayneMadsenReport.com. Let's welcome back to our programme our friend Wayne Madsen. Wayne, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
Hi, good to be with you.
Wayne, thanks very much. So 9/11 survivors have petitioned the UK government and Theresa May to publish a report that's been gathering dust on a shelf for several months now, a report commissioned by David Cameron into terrorist funding. The Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, said the report would not be published and that the British government would have frank conversations with countries mentioned in it, but the public wouldn't get to know it. Is there any hope for the survivors of the 9/11 attacks that they might get to see this report? Do you hold out any hope for them, Wayne, or are they wasting their time?
Well, I mean, the best they can do is put pressure on their representatives here in this country and make contact with the opposition in the UK. But, you know, the Saudis basically have Theresa May in their pocket. They have the foreign minister Johnson in their pocket. They've got Donald Trump in their pocket, as seen with the recent Trump's support for Saudi Arabia and their blockade of Qatar because Qatar refused to provide finances to the tune of $500 million to Jared Kushner's white elephant at 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. So there's a lot of people that you know are standing in line waiting for justice as it applies to Saudi Arabia. But as long as that regime remains in power behind their walled, their big walled palaces, I don't think we're going to get any relief.
When explain to our listeners who don't know maybe or don't understand, and it's not to suggest they don't have the intelligence, but explain to our listeners why keeping Saudi Arabia on side and not challenging the, you know, the many, many crimes of that regime, and not only crimes internationally, but crimes, of course, against its own citizens. Why is keeping Saudi Arabia on side, so to speak, so important for the British and the US governments?
Well, it's primarily because of oil, but also there's geopolitics. We finally now see the sand blowing away on something that has been the case for a number of years, the very close ties between the House of Saud and the House of Israel. Some people call it the House of David. We now see that these two regimes are in lockstep on a lot of issues, both as far as foreign policy is concerned, intelligence, military. They both are itching to get into a battle with Iran, one that the U.S. will shed the blood of its military personnel for. Both are behind the blockade of Qatar. Both are behind the Saudi war of genocide in Yemen. And as I wrote in my book, The Star and the Sword, both countries were actively involved behind the scenes in an intelligence manner with the 9/11 horror. So these two countries are two sides of the same coin. And as long as the Saudis have support in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, and Jerusalem and Tel Aviv have support in Jeddah and Riyadh, we'll see problems galore in the Middle East and around the world.
By the way, Wayne's book, The Star and the Sword, came out in 2014. Correct me if I'm wrong, 2013, yes. 2014. It was 2014. It's a terrific read, and it's available at all good online bookshops, and I should have mentioned it in my introduction. I've spoken to Wayne so many times, I sometimes don't mention it. It's a great read, and I recommend it. It's on my bookshelf here behind me in the studio. Wayne, just back to the 9/11 families, before we talk about Trump and his extra meeting with Putin and what's going on with the media coverage of that. The 9/11 survivors, God love them, and I mean that sincerely. Are they barking up the wrong tree with respect to the Saudi knowledge of the 15, the 15 hijackers or the 15 members of the team who were from Saudi Arabia? I mean, over the years, and I'm not one of those presenters who, likes to, constantly blame Israel for everything, but a lot of roads lead to Mossad in terms of the planning and the execution of what happened on 9/11. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely the case. We had this, when I first discovered, people were saying, no, the Saudis were behind 9/11, and others were saying, no, but the Israelis, what about these Israelis arrested? The only people arrested on September 11, 2001 were five Israelis in North Jersey. And I said, hey, listen, you're having the wrong argument. Did anyone stop to think that both Israel and Saudi Arabia supported the 9/11 operation, along with what I would consider traitors within the U.S. government? And I think, when the history books are written, whenever they will be written, that's what it's going to show. It's absolutely the case. Now, what can the 9/11 families do about this? Well, Saudi Arabia has hired some of the best public relations firms around. We see how, their water is carried in Washington. And then you couple that with the Israeli influence of AIPAC and these other various pressure groups. And it's very hard to go against that. Now, some people were hoping that Donald Trump was going to do something. I kind of realizing, I didn't want to tell people, look, he's going to be a big disappointment for you. But, his son-in-law and his daughter, Ivanka and Jared Kushner, are very orthodox in their practice of Judaism. And Bibi Netanyahu and Jared Kushner and Jared Kushner's father are the best of friends. And there are many links between the Kushner family and the Israeli intelligence service, the Mossad. For example, it was Charles Kushner and a Mossad agent that basically caught former New Jersey Governor Jim McGreevy in a honey trap operation. And why is that important? Well, it's important because later Governor McGreevy, before he was outed as gay, and he had been involved in this gay relationship with this Israeli Mossad agent named Golan Sipple, McGreevy appointed Sipple to be in charge of Homeland Security for the state of New Jersey. Well, guess what happened to all the evidence that New Jersey law enforcement had on what happened on September 11, 2001? It all disappeared.
It all disappeared. It's an extraordinary thing. I tried to get some comment today from a number of different groups who represent survivors of the attacks, people who were in the Trade Center itself, the towers, and I was stonewalled by the survivors because of, I suppose, where our program goes out and because we've got very strong opinions about who was really behind September the 11th. And I can respect that. It's disappointing, but I can respect it. Wayne Madsen is on the line, folks, the author and intelligence expert. Check out Wayne's website, which, as I mentioned earlier on, is waynemadsenreport.com. Read The Star and the Sword, by the way. You know, if you're new to this, what Wayne is talking about, it's a great introduction to what's really going on. Wayne, it's very interesting to see the mileage that the Trump hacking, the Russian hacking, the US election story is getting. Before we talk about the latest allegations around an extrajudicial meeting or an extracurricular meeting that Trump had with Putin, remind our listeners, Wayne, as far as I can tell, there's not even a shred of evidence to show that A, the Russians were in any way trying to influence or undermine the US election, or that B, senior members of Trump's team were in cahoots with the Russians. Remind us, is there any evidence at all to back any of this up?
Well, I feel the media is using the wrong term. When they say Russia, they're trying to indicate that it's we're talking about the Russian Federation government, the one that meets in Moscow and is headquartered in Moscow. When in fact the links that we're seeing, especially in this June 9, 2016 meeting at Trump Tower, there were no Russian government agents there. These were all members of the what the FBI, using a politically correct term, calls the Eurasian Mafia, but which I call the Kosher Nostra. They can't. I'm sure they wish they could, because Eurasia is kind of a wide term. Eurasia would include China, and China's not part of this. Yeah. But you look at this. These people are gangsters. They're mobsters. This number 8 guy who was just outed yesterday as attending the meeting, this Georgian American named Kavaladze, Irakli Kavaladze, he's a money launderer for the Kosher Nostra going back 20 years. This guy, and I wrote about it today, I discovered links between his network of created like 1,000 or more shell companies that the Russian Jewish oligarchs, and not just Russian Jewish, Moldovan Jewish, Belarusian Jewish, Azerbaijani Jewish, Georgian Jewish, Ukrainian Jewish, it goes on and on, Armenian Jewish, Kazakhstani and Uzbekistani Jewish, Bukharan Jews from Central Asia. All these oligarchs were using all these shell companies to launder their ill-gotten and legally gotten money, tax evasion, not paying tax to Russia. And they were buying up Trump properties, among other properties, by the building load. And this has been going on for over 20 years. And when you look at these shell companies, and I've got a roadmap that I'm keeping up to date, because every day we're finding out about a new individual, a new company. They've been involved in everything from smuggling weapons to including North Korean weapons. And where does that money eventually go, wind up? Well, as I've looked at quite extensively, this money is laundered by buying up property at Trump Tower in New York, Trump Soho in Manhattan, a Trump condo in Hollywood, Florida, Trump condos in Sunny Isles Beach, Florida, Trump condos in Las Vegas, Trump condos in Phoenix, and it goes on and on. So Donald Trump's money largely has come from these Russian, Israeli, Ukrainian gangsters and oligarchs. That's the problem. And if he had to see, Putin has the same problem with these oligarchs as Trump does, and as Obama did, and as George W. Bush did. The oligarchs, in most cases, have more power than national governments, including presidents like Putin, like Trump, like Theresa May. They're all over in Britain. Look at the number of oligarchs that call their home London, and Paris, and Zurich, and Geneva, and it goes on and on. So if Trump and Putin were discussing how are we going to break free from these, but unfortunately, Putin doesn't have a son-in-law who's involved in this. And this kosher nostra, but Trump does. So it's going to be very hard for Trump to break away from it.
There's no way in hell, is there, that the U.S. mainstream press is going to publish anything on this. I mean, your writing is unimpeachable, Wayne, and it really is. You wouldn't be here if it wasn't. You know, we take our program maybe more seriously than we should do, but we do, and we're very careful about who we invite on. Your writing is unimpeachable on this subject. It should be, spread right across the Washington Post, the New York Times. It's the sort of scandal that should bring a government down. But it won't. It won't bring the government and the system down. So what's going on then? When they're not going to print with this, which is absolutely, a massive story, and they're talking about the attempt to undermine Hillary Clinton and to throw the election for Trump, what are they really trying to do, Wayne? Are they trying to get Mike Pence instead of Trump? What's happening there?
Well, I mean, Mike Pence would be a godsend, literally a godsend for the evangelicals who poured out and voted for, this foul word speaking Trump. As a matter of fact, the word went out from every evangelical megachurch pulpit in the United States that, a vote for Trump was really a vote for Pence, because these people didn't think Trump was going to survive the 4 years in office and that he was going to be replaced by their man, Mike Pence. So Pence literally is there as to fulfill the prophecy made by these con men who run these mega churches. And by the way, these mega churches, Pence, sings the praises of the Israeli government all the time and preaches expansion of the settlements. If you look at some of these mega churches that have actually cost a lot of small, older churches to go out of business because they've drawn so many people away, sort of like Walmart killed the small town, stores. You look at these mega churches that even have coffee shops inside of them. And bowling alleys. Who do you think owns the notes, the mortgages for those mega churches? Well, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, and why do they have to sing the praises of Israel? Who holds the mortgage?
When we talk about this particular subject, I get frustrated because it's absolutely true what you're saying, but I know that we get bombarded with emails from people saying, what can we do about this? What can we do? The political class is the ruling class, and it is the wealthy class. These people have it all sewn up, and rail against it, though we might complain about it as we do programs, and we get big audience figures. You have a massive following on WayneManstonReport.com, Wayne. But what can we do about it? What can we can't vote our way out of this. We can't. So what is left then as a remedy against this tyranny, which is descending quicker and quicker and quicker into some dystopian future, the sort of crazy future we used to see on science fiction movies years ago? What are we going to do about all of this?
Well, we use their own tactics against them. I just explained, you know, who has Putin and Trump under their thumb? Well, it's this international group of oligarchs that have bought into media. They've bought into banking. They're sports, professional sports. Look how many teams they own, from football teams in the UK to basketball teams in the US. What we do is use this internet and whatever might take its place when the controls come on to the internet, as they probably will, as we're seeing the Trump administration get rid of net neutrality, which, by the way, will force all the independent and small time operators off the internet, and the Netflix and all these other companies that want to use the internet to stream videos and provide more nonsense and infotainment to the masses will take over the bandwidth. There are people out there who are saying that getting rid of net neutrality will help, the small independent websites. I don't know what they're smoking.
Yes.
Because having been involved in telecommunications issues since the early 80s, I can say that these people have no idea what they're talking about. And that includes Alex Jones and the rest. I don't know what deals he's cut. Maybe he's been given a promise by Trump that InfoWars and his, selling of Dr. Feelgood snake oil will have for it carved out a special amount of bandwidth on the internet. But the independents are going to lose out very badly. But there, I am told by programmers and people that know about the all the innovations in telecommunications that let them take the internet. There'll be other networks that will take their place. So we have to use these tools and forget that we're Americans or British or French or Russian and have the common goal of exposing these nefarious players and entities for what they are. Because, as I say, these oligarchs that are issuing orders to Trump and Putin and other world leaders, they're not going to stop at anything until they're satisfied they're controlling the whole nine yards.
And most of us are not here, are not around, which is what they want as well. Wayne, I'm going to pick you up on what you said about InfoWars. And I'm doing that because you're not the first guest who's been on the program recently who has had a relationship with InfoWars, who's become frustrated or disheartened by what's been going on there. Now, I put my cards on the table. I've known Alex for about 10 years, and I used to invite him to come on my programs regularly, and he did. And we had some pretty interesting conversations over the years. But what I've seen, especially leading up to the election, the blanket support of Donald Trump, let's be honest about it, Wayne, you're a journalist, the dreadful, disgraceful interview that Alex did with Trump when he never challenged him or asked him a single question. What happened to InfoWars? Was it something that was building? Was Alex always kind of like that? Was he always ambitious to place his brand alongside Fox News, or has something more sinister happened there in recent years, in your opinion?
Well, my take is that, many, many people have said through the years, there's no such thing as bad publicity. There's only publicity. And he's gotten good and bad. Trump has helped him immensely. And I believe he was in negotiations to try to carve out something on the cable, one of the cable news networks. Now that's good and fine, but sometimes overachieving or too much success can ruin an entity. People in the United States, my age, will remember in the 80s, there was a guy who was very outrageous named Morton Downey Jr., who had a TV show where he had people throwing chairs. He got in fights with neo-Nazis, and he had all kinds of and after a while, you know, he got cancer. The show had been canceled, and nobody hardly knew who this guy was anymore. And sometimes you can overachieve. You try to grab off more, and then you lose your base. You're trying to please people in Hollywood, and you totally disconnect from people in, you know, rural Oklahoma, for example.
I think that's
what's happening in Austin, Texas, to a large degree.
Well, there's nothing wrong. I mean, I totally endorse what you said. There's nothing wrong with ambition, and there isn't anything wrong with growing your platform. I mean, we continue to have very high expectations and ambitions for our show. We have a very big live audience now and a big podcast audience, but we want to grow it. But you can't do that and sacrifice your principles either way. And you can't all of a sudden start saying things that you don't really believe in to suit another audience, to bring more viewers your way. And Alex was very much of the understanding that, you know, Democrats, Republicans, two sides of the same coin, the oligarchs, as you said, Wayne, control all of that. And Alex was pretty principled in saying that for many, many years. And then, of course, he abandoned that principle. It's brought him a lot of extra viewers and listeners, no doubt about that. But it's a tragedy, really, is my opinion. I'll give you the final word on that, and then I'll let you get back to work. I appreciate you coming on, Wayne. Final word to you.
Well, I mean, you've got Donald Trump on many occasions calling himself a globalist. So this is a danger in supporting any political party or candidate or president. They change, and then you're expected to change along with them. And that's what I think has happened here. Donald Trump doesn't care about any of the people who voted for him and thought he was this great savior. He'll be the first guy to stick a shiv in their back.
Folks, Wayne Madsen Report. .com is where you can read Wayne daily. Terrific journalism. Man who's never sacrificed these principles or his beliefs. Says it how he sees it and takes his articles, follow the evidence wherever the evidence leads. Wayne, thanks, mate. Thanks for doing that. Talk to you again soon.
Good to be with you.
You too, mate. Wayne Madsen, journalist, author, columnist, expert in intelligence and international affairs on The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Listen, sometimes, no matter how hard you try, and I'm a pretty folksy, pretty homely type guy, generally, genuinely, but no matter how hard you try, you sometimes come across as being arrogant or up your own arse. And maybe I've come across as arrogant and up my own arse in the past, even though I'm not like that. I think if you do shows long enough, you have your bad nights and your bad moments. But we do have ambitions. I doubt we'll ever achieve the sorts of numbers and the levels of audience participation that something like InfoWars has. But we know we have big ideas about where we can take this particular programme. But never down any road where you start to become something that you're not really, and you start to sacrifice your principles and your opinions, and you start to say to people what you think they want to hear, or what it is they want to hear, for monetary gain or for fame or to build your audience. You can't do that. You just can't. Maybe in the case of InfoWars, they got so big that it doesn't matter. You know, but I've known Alex a long time. David Icke has known him longer, but don't ever confuse my opinion of Alex with David. So I don't speak for David about Alex. Whatever David Icke thinks about Alex Jones, that's David's business. And I certainly couldn't be speculating as to that. My opinion, used to speak to the guy an awful lot, got some sense out of him. There were nights when I interviewed him and we argued about things. I didn't get much sense out of him, but there was always the feeling, at least from my point of view, that he was sincere, and that whatever he was saying at that moment, however outlandish it might have been, it was what he believed at that particular moment in time. He was a mass of contradictions, but at least he was sincere. I'm a mass of contradictions, I think, sometimes. But sincerity. So I don't care what anybody says on this program, so long as I think they believe it. And as long as they believe it, it's fair game. They can say whatever they want. You know, and that's why we invite politicians on and mainstream journalists on and scientists on. And it pisses you off sometimes when I do that. But I do, because I know those people believe what they're saying. As long as you believe what you're saying, you know, I listen to you all day long, even if I disagree with you. Time for another quick break. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and of course, davidicke.com. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Number of comments about Alex and InfoWars on Twitter. Go to twitter.com, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, and you will see what other people are tweeting to me back in 90 seconds.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Welcome back. 2 minutes past the hour. It is Wednesday, the 19th of July, 2017. And you are listening to the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting in association with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, fabradiointernational.com on Channel 2. Do check out that terrific platform as well. And as usual, it's always good to be with you. Very humid night. Thunder and a big break in the weather is in the offing, we're told, here in Madchester. Supposed to have overnight floods. Now, there were floods, of course, down south, and that's gotten a lot of news coverage today. Heaven help those people whose houses were washed out today. Cornwall, is it? Is that right? The flash floods that we saw overnight, absolutely dreadful that. Your heart absolutely breaks for people when you see those images on TV of houses absolutely destroyed. It was in Cornwall, yeah. Yes, you're telling me it was Cornwall. I'm thinking of something else at the same time. Right, Sophia Smallstorm is an amazing woman. She's going to join me in a minute. If you have a question for her on what she will be talking about, tweet it to @RichieAllenShow or email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Got some House of Pain lined up.
She won't come.
I love this. Don't ask me why. Never been much of a rap fan. This is at top of the morning to you on the Richie Allen Show from the House of Pain. It was, wasn't it? It was for a minute. Mother of God. I've done it again. Here we go again.
When you want it.
There you are. Must be the heat. Great stuff, this. House of Pain, top of the morning. Sophia Smallstorm next.
You see, I'm Irish, but I'm not a leprechaun. You want to fight, then step up and we'll get it on. You get a right to the grill. I'm white and I'm ill, a descendant of Dublin with Titanic skill. I ducked and I swing, next thing your jaw's broken. Punk, I ain't joking, you can bet you've been choking on a fistful of nothing. Meanwhile, I'll be puffing on a fat blunt. What punk, you don't know the hat. Trying to talk shit, man, please don't make me laugh. These Irish eyes are smiling, I'm buckwiling. The House of Pain is pumping, start jumping.
House of Pain, top of the morning to you on your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining us. Always good to have your company. Like that, haven't heard that for a while. Broadcasting around the world on DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio and RichieAllen.co.uk. This is Europe's most listened to independent radio show, verifiably. Thank you for making it so. Our next guest has been on with me before, talking about important issues like chemtrails, Morgellons disease, the Podesta emails, and much more besides. She's a brilliant broadcaster, filmmaker, researcher, and writer. And you can find her at her website, aboutthesky.com. That's aboutthesky.com. She's an old friend of David Icke's, and David introduced me to her, and I'm glad he did. Let's welcome back to the programme to talk about something very important. It's our old friend, Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Thank you very much. I'm fine.
Really good to have you on. Now, and thanks for coming on, by the way, today. Soil and gut biome. We're going to talk about how chemical fertilisers and chemical pesticides have changed our soil, mostly since the Second World War, and what that's done to the soil. The toxins, how they've affected the soil and removed or caused the loss of the soil biome, the huge impact that's had on our gut, and how that's linked to certain agendas like transhumanism. This is massive, Sophia. Over to you. What's going on?
Well, Richie, the link to this transhumanism angle is a huge stretch that just hit me the other day, so let's ignore it for now. But let me mention that after World War II, there was this thing called the Green Revolution in America for sure, and that's when they began to introduce into agriculture chemical fertilizers. Now, these were petroleum-derived, but in addition, this is very unknown, I'm sorry to say. In the old days, when these big industries were booming, particularly during the war, the Manhattan Project industries, the aluminum companies, the smelters, the refiners, the synthetic rubber business, when they had toxins, factory waste, you know, that accrued in the chimneys, it was called baghouse dust, flue dust, they would just dump it on empty land somewhere. They would say, who cares? Nobody's using this land. Let's just put it here. But as time progressed, and the country developed more of an environmental consciousness, the Environmental Protection Agency started to get a little more hard-nosed about this, and you weren't allowed to just dump toxins anywhere. So the companies were faced with the need to expensively dispose of these things, which were now classified as hazardous waste. And what they did, they came up with a brainwave. Somebody said, look, all these things, aluminum, strontium, barium, titanium, manganese, lead, arsenic, they're all in the periodic table. They're all earth elements. They're all found in the earth. Let's just mix them with fertilizer, give this to the farmers, and have them sprinkle it on the soil. So that was the advent of chemical fertilizers. They literally used baghouse dust with these toxins in it and thought that they were thinning it out, and gave it to the agricultural industry. So for decades, we've been eating crops that have been laced with chemical fertilizers and these toxins. Now, after they introduced the fertilizers and put those on the crops, that injured the crops and weakened them, and that brought the pests, and now you had the need for another industry, chemical pesticides, right? So between the two, since World War II, between chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides, let me just point out, organic is a bit limited. It's limited thinking. Here in California, organic farmers are allowed to put up to 250 chemicals on their crops and still be considered organic, because wow, these chemicals are in the form of fertilizers.
250 and still keep their organic label.
That's right. So organic is a misnomer. It's only talking about half the show. It's talking about the chemical pesticides. It is not talking about the fertilizers. So here we are. We've been chowing down food that's grown on farms that even the small farms use a lot of chemical fertilizer. You have to know your farmer and ask him directly what he's doing. But regardless, what happened was the biome or bacterial culture of the soil has been really, really diminished as a consequence of being laden, the soil being laden with chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides. Now, what does that mean to us? Besides the fact that our plants are growing in toxins, thank you, I just want you to know, this was mind-blowing to me when I learned it. You cannot process the food you eat. You can grow it, you can eat it, you can cook it, chew it, prepare it, fix it up so it looks nice, it tastes good, you swallow it, and that's about as much as you have to do with it. It is up to our gut biome, this enormous quantity, millions and millions and millions of bacteria, these little organisms that live in your gut, to break that food down. They liberate the energy from the food. So your gut starts in your head. It starts with your sinus passages. It includes your esophagus. It goes down and is your digestive system. But the gut is closed in by a firewall called the gut wall. And that holds these bacteria in your digestive tract, okay, the gut wall. The gut wall is a membrane. It is one cell thick. And if you can picture all these cells, they hook together. They're held together by what's called tight junction proteins. And this gut membrane is critical to us because it's intelligent. It knows when to open, meaning the cells separate slightly. And that's how digested materials get out into the bloodstream, because on the other side of the gut wall is your blood supply. All these blood vessels waiting and going, give me these nutrients. I've got to carry them all over the body to the cells. So your gut, the way it functions, it's got to function in an intelligent way. This gut wall cannot just open up anytime. It's got to be tight at certain times, open at other times. Now, when you have, for instance, diarrhea, that's an immune function, a Th1 immune system function. That means the gut wall opens and water is drawn in from the rest of your body by way of the blood, and you flush yourself out because there's a pathogen or something irritating that you have in your digestive tract. So this gut wall opening and closing is a big part of the game. But what happens is that these bacteria that live in us, because they haven't been proliferating in the soil to the extent that they should be there, each of us should have 20 to 30,000 different types of bacteria living in our gut in the form of millions and millions and millions of individual organisms, but 20 to 30,000 different types, all right, in order to process food. What happened was, because of this diminution of the soil biome, naturally the gut biome has diminished because we transfer those bacteria into ourselves from the foods that we eat. And so we're living today, it takes 44 people together to come up with a range of 10,000 species of gut bacteria. So that means we're all running at about 10% of our gut biome. We have mono gut.
Sophia, how is this manifesting itself physically? What are we seeing happening to people? What changes physically are we realizing about ourselves to show that this is happening?
Right. What we're seeing is a massive increase in disease. And the reason is, I learned this from a very brilliant doctor called Zachary Bush. I didn't learn it from him directly. Zachary Bush was a cancer researcher, and he was treating people with chemotherapy. He was actually a chemotherapy formulator, coming up with different forms of chemo agents. And he took a complete 180-degree turn in his work. He is someone who is totally brilliant. And what I learned from all these interviews with him, which you can go to yourself, was that actually, disease is a misnomer. The failing of human health starts with the gut. Asthma is not a disease of the lungs. It's a failure of the gut. It's a disease of the gut expressed by the lungs. So everything wrong with us, Richie, starts by the gut failing. And it's not just the gut wall that's failing. You see, with the gut wall opening up the way it does, and toxins are irritants, glyphosate is the most prevalent toxin on the planet. You're familiar with that by Monsanto,
of course.
Right?
Yeah.
It's an herbicide. Glyphosate is in the air. It's in the rain. You could be the most pristine organic consumer, and yet the minute you step outside, open your window, thank you very much, glyphosate is now influxing into your body because it's in the air. So what does glyphosate do? Glyphosate and other toxins cause your body to release a protein called zonulin. And zonulin says, whoop, opens the gut wall right up. And this is how you get irritable bowel and leaky gut. Now, everybody today has leaky gut. There are no exceptions. Everybody's got leaky gut. Those cells in that gut membrane are not shutting and opening when and as they should. They are misfiring, you could say. And what's happening is swirling around in your whole body are things that are not supposed to be there. So you are never supposed to let out unprocessed proteins. Proteins have to be broken into amino acids. But if they're half processed and they leak into your bloodstream, your Th2 antibody immune system goes crazy and starts producing antibodies. So neither should oils in their complex molecular form be released by the gut too early. They should be broken down into individual lipids. And so all of this lack of control is causing our health to fail. It's causing a big, ugly soup, a chaos in our body. So the other part of this, which is really fascinating, it's a little bit hard to understand, but remember that I said we all need 20,000 to 30,000 different kinds of bacteria. Why do we need so many? The reason is that each bacterial form, now I want to hit you with something that's going to kind of possibly send you reeling. Bacteria are not human. We are called eukaryotes. We are from the eukaryotic life kingdom. Bacteria are prokaryotes. So what has happened is we have integrated, we have imported, we have incorporated another life form into our bodies on a permanent basis. And they are the little guys that do the business of liberating the fats and sugars from our food. We can't do it. That is a non-human process. All those millions and millions of bacteria living in our gut are the ones who set upon the food and liberate, loosen, free the fats and sugars. Now, those fats and sugars are taken by your waiting bloodstream on the other side of the gut wall to your cells. And guess what's in your cells? There's another foreigner in your cells. They're called mitochondria. They're not human, but they are critical agents in the nucleus of the cell. They derive from ancient bacteria. So the job of processing our food is done by bacteria. The job of taking those freed fats and sugars and taking electrons out of them and giving those to the cell to work with as energy, that's done by another imported alien called mitochondria. This is what the evolutionary biologist Lynn Margulis, wife of Carl Sagan, called endosymbiosis. This is us acting like corporations like Exxon, Chevron. As we complexified, our energy needs became greater. We are complex beings. I'm talking to you over technology. I'm not just an ant scurrying around with one or two simple tasks in the building of an ant colony. Human beings are complex. Therefore, their energy needs are complex, and they have incorporated another life form to help them do very basic but crucial energy processing tasks, the bacteria and the mitochondria. So you can feed back to me on that. Had you ever known that?
I didn't know that. It's absolutely mind-blowing stuff for me. I did not know that. There's a lot of comment coming in on Twitter. I'm not going to get into the comments yet. We'll wait till we take a wee break shortly. I just want to do a quick recap. Sophia Smallstorm is on the line from California. Her website is aboutthesky.com. Broadcaster, journalist and filmmaker. Great to have her on. We're talking about, it's a very complex subject, but it's hugely important, our gut biome and how it has been attacked by pollutants and toxins that we've been exposed to, which have made our gut wall leaky. The implications of that for our health are enormous. And I know you don't want to get into transhumanism today, and we probably won't, but, you know, the men and women who've been on this programme in the last 2.5, 3 years, yourself included, Sophia, and what they've been telling me, it's easy to connect the dots and connect this to the depopulation agenda, the transhumanist agenda. But we need necessarily get into that now. How is this being... It isn't just fertilisers and it isn't just pesticide either. This segues into what you've been writing and talking about for years, geoengineering and what's coming out of the skies. So it's a full frontal assault on the soil, on the living soil, right?
Right. The population of organisms on the earth is under attack, meaning the varieties are being diminished very quickly. And I want to add one more thing about our health, but I'll just say this about the depopulation of species, including bacteria variations. We should have had, there once was 200 feet of topsoil on the earth, 200 feet. Do you know how much the earth has now?
Couldn't imagine.
2 feet if we're lucky. And this is partly, Richie, because of grading and construction. I mean, seriously, the amount of deforestation, the amount of pillaging of the land to build our roads and our cities and whatnot, the topsoil is gone. So what happens in the gut with the bacteria is the bacteria are anaerobic. They don't make energy the way we make it. They make energy in their own way, and one of their byproducts is this particular kind of carbon molecule. And each variety of bacteria makes a different type of carbon molecule. And you can imagine with 30,000 varieties of bacteria in us, as we should have 30,000 different kinds of carbon metabolites. That's what they're called. Now, what Dr. Bush discovered was that these carbon molecules, they match up exactly with mitochondria in our many thousands of different types of cells and tissues. And there is a signaling that goes on between the bacteria, carbon metabolites, and the mitochondria in our cells. And this regulates our health. This signaling process, this talking between the carbons, think of them like motorcycle sidecars. Each bacterial type has its own sidecar. And the sidecar talks to the mitochondria in the cells, because they're both other life forms, and says, hello, you are going cancerous, you need to die. And signals uptick and downtick of health regulation. So our health is actually regulated by a foreign life form in our bodies. Now I'll throw you a transhumanism curveball. Is it any different that we are now on the path to integrating, once again, incorporating artificial technologies into our body, for instance, nanobots to run our health? Do you see what has happened? Once they do away with one thing, they can replace it with another thing. As they diminish the species of trees and animals and fish and whatever all over the planet, they can pop up with their own creations that are genetically engineered, that they'll tell us, hey, you want some bait fish in the ocean? We'll take our engineered sardines. And they can easily replace the dying trees in your backyard with their very limited variants of GE, genetically engineered trees, that you will have to pay a license on. But this is what hit me the other day. It's very possible that the next leg of this evolution, whoever you want to say is behind it, is going to be much like what we already did. We integrated another life form into our bodies. Nobody seems to have a problem with it. Nobody's even aware of it. So possibly in the future, this push into merging with machine, man merges with technology, is just another phase of that complexification. Do you understand?
Absolutely. Absolutely. On this subject, there's been a lot of tweets and a load of questions on this. Most commonly, people are tweeting and asking, are emailing questions about zoning laws which have propped up all across the US, which say that, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, although they own their property, they can't or they shouldn't grow vegetables in their gardens. Now, I know that you could claim that, well, it doesn't matter, because if the soil is suffering from abiotic stress, if the soil is contaminated, it doesn't matter. But again, to see how multifaceted this is, stopping people from growing vegetables in their own gardens certainly connects to this agenda, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, people operate under the slight myth that if they eat organic and they eat a wide variety of really good food, they will be healthy. The fact is they're not going to be, and they're finding that out. Everybody's got little things wrong with them. Because they just don't have, no matter how well you eat, how absolutely perfectly precision-tuned your organic diet is, you are simply not getting the 20 to 30,000 bacterial types in your gut biome. You're running at 10% or better, and that's not enough. You're not getting enough carbon molecules, and they're not speaking to your mitochondria in the right ways, and therefore your health is not being optimally regulated. So whether these are all sideshows, Richie, that you can grow tomatoes or you can't, you can give them to your neighbor or you can't. The idea is to capsize human health. And I don't know if it was intentional, if there was that much scientific understanding that once you took the soil biome down, you would affect the gut biome and you would dysregulate people's health in the way that we are experiencing it. But the fact is that we are all having issues of many, many, many kinds that we think we can improve with an organic diet, and that is true to a certain extent.
You're right. Now, listen, you're right. We've seen reports this week that half the US population, over 150 million people, are taking a number of pills on a daily basis. This is absolutely staggering. You're right to say that human health is in some sort of crisis state, or at least some sort of state of collapse. I absolutely agree with you. And you're right to say the growing your own food is a sideshow. But it's a way to explain to people, because people don't understand it. You know, why have I been interfered with? Why are they trying to stop me growing my own food? The reason I brought that point up, and our listeners are tweeting that, is because you just mentioned there, and you're very, very, one of the great things about you, Sophie, is you don't claim anything as a fact unless you can prove it. That's why I like having you on the program. And you say, I wonder, was it known if the soil biome was to be interfered with? Was it known just how catastrophic it would be for human beings? You'd have to imagine, Sophia, that it was known and that this isn't coincidental. It's been part of some plan, some agenda for some time, right? You'd have to, you know, the evidence would lean towards this is part of some overriding plan, as you put it brilliantly, to collapse human health.
Right. And when you collapse human health, you can offer science and its solutions. And that's the trap that people fall into. They get to the point where they are so desperate that they'll take help from the very people who have thrown them under the bus. And when we are, you know, told what we can do and what we can't do, the real issue is, how healthy are we? And I just learned that we're not. There's no regulation on how much all the different types of toxins that can be put into chemical fertilizers. Chemical fertilizers are not regulated, and they're still being used. There was a very well-written book in the 90s. Researched in the 90s and published in 2001 called Fateful Harvest, Fateful, F-A-T-E-F-U-L, Harvest, by a Seattle Times reporter, Duff, D-U-F-F, Wilson. It's a brilliant, brilliant book, and it details this whole business of chemical fertilizers and how nobody knew about it. They were starting to get cancer clusters in farmland, and nobody could figure out why the farmers were dying. They should have been the healthiest people, and it was because of all the stuff they were putting on their crops. And sometimes they got really weird things, like, you know, when you injure something, its reaction is to boom into health. This is the idea behind radiation and even chemotherapy, that when you seriously injure biological organisms, they will have a health response, a regrowth response like you've never seen before. But you cannot keep injuring them. You're going to have to expect that sooner or later, the rate of return is going to definitely not be there. And we are being injured. We are being insulted on an ongoing basis. And what they're observing, I believe, is who's going to thrive? Who's going to be able to bear all this? Because not everyone is going to die or keel over or have serious health issues. There are going to be people who can make it. And those people will have whatever resilience is deemed, you know, the prototype for this new humanity 2.0 that's going to be integrated with technology.
With machines. Now, you have identified a product, and I want to talk about that in a few minutes. This is not an ad, by the way, but Sophia has identified a product, and I'm going to make you aware of that in a minute, and she can talk about it. But it's absolutely true that we've never been as unhealthy. You know, I've been looking at a lot of different studies, and I know studies can say anything, and academic studies are very subjective, and I know that, and I know that you have to take them with a pinch of salt. But study after study after study, you know, again, highlighting the fact that nearly everybody is on some sort of medication for some sort of debilitating illness. Today, Sophia, it was right across the UK media, there was a report that the vast majority, this is true, most adults in the country are not getting enough sleep, and it's causing chaos with their lives and their health. Now, there's a number of reasons. Insomnia, not being able to sleep. Some people have the snoring disorder, the sleep apnea, and all of that. Of course, what's interesting about that is that's connected to the prevalence of Wi-Fi and the effects that that has on people and people's inability to sleep. But the upshot of it is, some scientists now are saying that those who don't get much sleep are several times more likely to develop, wait for it, dementia and Alzheimer's. You know, we like to connect the dots. You go to aboutthesky.com, folks, if you're listening to this, you'll see that Sophia connects a lot of dots on a lot of different issues. Connect the dots between geoengineering, chemtrails, spraying, what we've been talking about, dementia, Alzheimer's. It's all linked up. There is an agenda to destroy the health of as many people as whose health can be destroyed, to further that Agenda 21, Agenda 30 depopulation. Problem is, when you talk about this to people and you introduce it to people, they shake their head and they say, you're crazy. This is crazy conspiracy nonsense. Even though they won't argue with you when you say, well, pretty much everybody is suffering with or living with some sort of treatable or manageable condition of some kind or other. And what you've said to me today is that this can be traced to what's happened to our soil and what's going on in our gut. And I believe you. I have no doubt you're right.
Well, Richie, you know, the body it operates in a sort of pyramidic fashion. The most important organs would be your brain, your heart, and your lungs. And the body will strip minerals and nutrients from cells of secondary systems, which would be your skeleton, your bones, your muscles, and your skin. So when you look at old people today, despite the fact that they're living a long time, as you say, some of them are on 20 medications, but they're just, you know, barely able to walk.
Existing.
They've got parchment-like skin. Their bones are rotting out. They've all got degenerative bone diseases, joints, and they have terrible muscle tone. They have sarcopenia and atrophy of the muscles, and that's because their body is robbing their bones, muscles, and skin of nutrients to feed so that the blood supply is carrying it all to the heart, brain, and the lungs. That's the order of importance. So my question is, do you want to be like that? Or do you want to inform yourself maximally? There is something that was discovered and made that addresses this lack of carbon metabolite spectrum in the soil biome that upticks your health instantly and is really, really amazing. And I was thinking, oh my God, what are we going to do? And then I stumbled over this particular formulation and started to try it, and I want the whole world to know about it.
This is called Restore, right? And
yes,
it brings carbon metabolites back into our system, into our stomach, into our gut. And you say, you, in your experience, and I have no reason to doubt you whatsoever, your experience of it has been that it has been transformational, has it?
Totally. And I first had a bunch of friends take it with me. I wanted them to try it, and then I started selling it, and I've sold, I think it's like 20 cases in a couple of months, and people are reporting amazing things. Now, I'll tell you what happened. This Dr. Bush, who fell upon this brainwave by accident, it was all fluke, and that's how the world works. You will be the lucky receiver of some fluky bit of information, and it will change your life and everyone else's. So Dr. Bush found in a paper on soil, a white paper, a study, the diagram of a molecule, which was one of these carbon things. And he looked at it and he said, my God, this looks just like a chemotherapy molecule. How could this be in the soil? And the explanation around that is that when they formulate chemotherapy agents, they're actually creating them so they have binding sites, angles kind of, that match up with mitochondria in particular cell systems and tissues, because they want your chemo to go after the cancer in that particular cell system. They don't want it to just kill everything. That's the idea. So as a chemo formulator, he saw that the soil has something in it that has a shape much like that of the chemo molecules I've been working on, and why. And that's when he realized that there were other studies in science from UCLA and UCSD that said, if you don't have this type of bacteria in your gut, you're likely to develop prostate cancer. If you don't have this type of bacteria, you're likely to develop breast cancer. And Dr. Bush decided it's got to have something to do with these carbon molecules, that they actually match up with the mitochondria in those cell systems and tissues, and they talk and they regulate the health. And he turned out to be absolutely right. So he went to the American Southwest, which is desert. It has not been farmed at all in modern style ever. And it is compacted, desertified, desiccated earth. It was once 200 feet of topsoil, but now it isn't. Now it's dry. Now guess what? The bacteria are gone. It's not alive. It's not living soil. It's dried earth. But the carbons are still there. That range of carbons exists in desert soil. So with some brilliant chemists, he was able to excavate this soil and take what's called these lignite extracts from it and reactivate them into this product, Restore. So if you take a teaspoon of Restore before your meals, up to 3 teaspoons a day, you have the carbons brought back into your gut. And that uptick in health, that signaling, it's called redox signaling, to your cells, starts to work again. Also, the carbon molecules happen to be able to re-regulate your tight junctions in your gut wall. You don't have leaky gut anymore. It starts to all work intelligently. So there's something very important and crucial with the language system of this foreign life form, bacteria, that we constantly have in us that really does manage our health.
How long has he been manufacturing it, Sophia? How long has it been available?
I think it's about 3 or 4 years. And it's called Restore, and I sell it on avatarproducts.com. And unfortunately, you have to keep taking it, or you'll get your old symptoms back. But I'm telling you, the difference in my body, the first thing it does for you is elevate mood and make you feel a lot better. That's across the board, kind of most people feel that. And Richie, I'm telling you that when your body is in disarray, when you've got stuff spilling and coursing and swirling all over in the wrong places, when your cell membranes aren't intact anymore and they're not functioning intelligently, you are a big, huge mess on the biochemical level, right? And you know it. This filters up into your consciousness. This is how you feel despair, hopelessness, crankiness, a feeling of dis-ease, yuckiness. I don't have to describe it. We all feel it. You start taking Restore and now you feel good. You feel happy. You don't have brain fog. You don't have this sense of, oh my God, why am I alive in this day and age? Because your body is starting to work. And that pours a new kind of energy into your soul.
It's very difficult, isn't it? In, we have a lot of skeptics among our audience, and that's a healthy thing. I have no problems with it. I encourage skepticism, and we will have people listening tonight, and they will say, you know, how do we know? This is the catch 22 situation we have here, because trying to get medicine, trying to get a product trialed today. And to get past all of that red tape, of course, and all of those problems that you have to go through to get it marketed, particularly when there's such, you know, an ongoing assault, again, to use that word, on alternative medicine by big pharmaceutical companies. It's so difficult, and people are sceptical, and I don't know. I mean, we never do advertisements on this program like that. We don't do infomercials. I'm happy to talk about this with you because I admire you, and I know that. You're sincere, and if you say that you've taken it and you've found it beneficial, even though you are selling it, I believe you. I believe you're sincere in that. Where can people read more about it, Sophia, to find out for themselves? You mentioned a website there.
Well, listen, I put a bunch of posts on my blog, sophiasmallstorm.com, that are interviews with Dr. Bush. I had to listen to about 8 of them, and sometimes twice, and taking notes. And it was difficult because they were done with practitioners and everybody talked really fast and a lot of the stuff went over my head. But then I did a synthesis of an interview, and that's on my blog also, and it's called Carbon, Bacteria, and Soil, Our Inner Secret. So if you go to sophiasmallstorm.com and you scroll down and search for Carbon, Bacteria, and Soil, listen to that show. And there's also a lot of testimonials, feedback from people who are taking Restore that I obtained. So it's going to be very interesting, I'm sure. And it's a much longer, more mellow interview than the one I'm doing now. But you can go online and you can just go to YouTube and you can type in Zach, Z-A-C-K, or is it Z-A-C-H, Bush, and Restore, Leaky Gut. And it's been really helpful for autistic children as well. They tend to start rebounding in a marked and very amazing way. And I don't know what to say other than I'm not doing this to sell. I'm doing this because it works for me. It worked for my friends, is working. And I find it pretty amazing. And you know what? It's not a medication.
It's completely it's completely natural, isn't it? The product is completely natural. The ingredients are completely natural.
Right. It looks like weak Lipton tea, light brown, and you'd simply take a teaspoon. It tastes like, well, if you were to take a teaspoon of Lipton tea with no sugar or anything in it, that's what it tastes like.
So to sell it, I suppose, it has to be sold as a supplement, doesn't it? This is because of the regulations and the rules. Is it expensive?
One would think, Richie, a 1 month supply, 16 ounces, is $50, and you can buy a 2 month supply for $70. And that seems expensive. But the thing is this, I noticed that once I started to take Restore, I didn't have to take all the other stuff I was taking, the CoQ10 and this stuff that I've been getting tips on, you know, probiotics. I just want to say, Dr. Bush explained. Are you ready? Probiotics, there's a $30 billion industry. Guess where probiotics come from? From cows' intestines. Cows. they're no good for us. They make a difference initially because it's a new variety of bacteria that your body's getting and it's going, thank you, okay, this is something. But ultimately, probiotics are intended for cows. They come from cows.
Well, that's a multi-million dollar industry, isn't it, probiotics? You can't go to any shop, you know, or store without seeing them. I think I might have tried them. I think I did buy some probiotics at some stage and didn't find them useful at all. Look, our listeners, Sophia, like I said, are very, very discerning anyway. I certainly can't sell them anything. You or anybody else can't sell them anything. Respect you, though I'm sure they do. One or two of our listeners saying, is this an infomercial? No, it isn't. What we were talking about, the gut biome is very, very serious. It is deadly serious. And I believe that Sophia is absolutely right when she talks about that. We've talked about this before using terms like abiotic stress. And of course, Monsanto is a company that says it has a gene, has a seed that can grow in soil that has been, or that is suffering from abiotic stress, which is the same thing, really, ultimately. This is very, very, very serious. And I have no doubt that the debilitating illnesses that people are feeling, that, you know, all roads do ultimately lead to the gut, irrespective of how the toxins are getting into our soil and into our body. You know, it's the gut. I absolutely believe that. I've come to believe that in the time that I've been presenting this programme. Give that website again, Sophia, where people can have a look at this product before they make their own minds up on whether to try it or not. Go ahead.
Well, you can look at the Restore website, which is restoreforlife.com. Thanking me for bringing you this information, you can go to my blog and search carbon, bacteria, and soil. That's on sophiasmallstorm.com. And I give a very, very lengthy, detailed interview. I bring in things to this interview that the Restore interviews that I heard did not bring in, like the fertilizer content in the chemical content in the fertilizers. And I want you to know something, Richie. Glyphosate originated as a factory chimney descaler. That they used it to clean out factory chimneys.
I had read that somewhere, yeah. I mean, I've never had any doubt that it's a carcinogen.
And a chemotherapy agent. So at my store is avatarproducts.com, and you can try a bottle. I mean, people have nothing to lose just trying one bottle and seeing the difference. And I'll tell you something else. The dreams and the depth of sleep. When you mentioned that you don't get good sleep anymore and it's possibly due to Wi-Fi, I would agree. It's really due to dysregulation of the autonomic nervous system, which has two branches, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. The parasympathetic nervous system is sleep, digest, relax. The sympathetic nervous system is, oh my God, I got to do fight or flight. Something's happening to me. And all this jolting that we get from the Wi-Fi routers in our houses, which I have none of, thank you, and the cordless and cell phones that we constantly use, and the cell towers that are all around us, we are being jolted on the cellular level. And the injury to the cells, we have overexcitation to the body and the nervous system. And so the parasympathetic system does not go into action. It can't get you to calm down. It can't get you to sleep. And I'm gonna tell you something. The reason we sleep, Richie, the reason we lie down and are quiet for whatever, 6, 8, 10 hours a day, is because our cells are doing deep restoration. Our body doesn't want us to be moving. The repair process is so deep. And by people not getting that kind of sleep, they are missing more healing that they desperately need. So when you take Restore, my God, your sleep is so deep and the dreams are amazing. These long, detailed, incredible dreams. And this has to do, to me, this is proof of the re-regulation of the balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system.
Well, if any of our listeners do try it, I'm sure they'll let me know how they get on with it. I couldn't, and Sophia wouldn't expect me to. I couldn't endorse anything that I haven't personally tried. I couldn't do that. I'm not endorsing anything at all. I'm endorsing Sophia because I've known her for some time now, and I've always been very impressed with her work, but I'm certainly not endorsing any product or urging anybody to buy any product. But you can make your own mind up as listeners. Go to sophiasmallstorm.com, and we're just about out of time for the programme. Hugely informative, that, Sophia. Really important stuff. Thanks for coming back on the programme. You've always got an open door to our show. Really appreciate your time. And look after yourself and stay in touch.
Yes, Richie, thank you. And I hope someday you get to try something like Restore. If not Restore, I know I'm not going to push it on you. And you will get your carbon molecules in there, and they'll start talking to all your cells, and you'll be a whole new Richie Allen.
Sounds good to me. Sophia, thanks a lot. The great Sophia Smallstorm on the line to us there from California. Great stuff. Thank you to her. Number of you saying, can she... Charlotte says, can Sophia convince us that she's not doing an Alex Jones with the supplement promotion? Well, she's not, you see, because I invited her on the programme. You have to understand, this isn't her programme. I invited her on the programme to talk about gut biome and the abiotic stress of soil and how that's making us unhealthy. I knew that there was a product that she was raving about, and I had planned on asking her about it. An infomercial is something entirely different. That's not the way it works on this programme. I have never done and never will do promote a product or allow somebody else to promote a product without pointing out the fact that I am not endorsing it. I'm not promoting it at all. You are an adult. You make your own mind up. You listen to interviewees on this programme and you can make a decision yourself as an informed person whether that makes sense to you or not, whether you think something is worth trying or not, and you do that. You will never, ever, ever hear me endorse a product or a supplement or invite you to try it either. Never. Simple as that. This isn't InfoWars or anything like many of the other programs you listen to on a weekly basis. We don't do that. Don't do it. Never will, never have, never will. The subject itself she was talking about is vitally important, in my opinion. Nearly out of time. I've got to take a very quick break, actually, before we come back and wrap up. Thanks for staying with me. Back in exactly 60 seconds.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 6 minutes to the top of the hour, nearly out of time for Wednesday's programme. It's been a quick old week, I think. It's been a quick old week. I have an interesting man coming on the programme tomorrow, I think, from Los Angeles, called Ted Hayes, who's a very famous activist in Los Angeles, working with the homeless population of the huge, vast urban sprawl that is Los Angeles, and came across an interview that Ted Hayes did with the BBC. Typically, when you see anybody being interviewed by the BBC, they don't get very much time to elucidate, to express themselves. But I found him fascinating. So I've invited Ted on the programme. He's up for it, and I think we'll have him on the programme tomorrow. Really, really, really interesting guy. That's Thursday's programme. Don't forget the programme will be live on Friday, this Friday at 1 p.m. British Summer Time. That's 1 p.m. on Friday. There'll be an hour of news and analysis with me on Friday. That's to make up for our mishap last week when we were knocked off the air on Wednesday and missed Thursday. So we'll do that on Friday. Huge thanks to Wayne Madsen for coming back on the programme, and to Sophia Smallstorm. A big shout out to both of them as well. to keep up to date with what's going on and with the information that you won't get from the mainstream media and the sort of analysis you won't get, do stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines. That's davidicke.com/headlines. Don't forget that later this year in November, three dates. You have David in Edinburgh, in London and in Manchester promoting the launch, the release of his forthcoming book. I will be comparing the events in London and in Manchester. I look forward to those. To find out how to get to those events, go to davidicke.com. And I recommend that you check out fabradiointernational.com. But let me also recommend something I do mention from time to time, and that is the Truth Seeker app. The Truth Seeker app. Great app. Free. Nothing, no obligation to you. And when you download the app to your phone or to your tablet or to your laptop or whatever, you end up with many, many independent programs are featured on there. They automatically upload to you. When some of the big independent shows, James Corbett, many others, when they upload their podcasts, they download immediately to your phone, and can't recommend that enough, the Truth Seeker app. That's it for Wednesday's program. Thanks for listening to it. Look after yourselves and one another. We're going to leave you with some Eagle Eye Cherry. You and I will chat again tomorrow at 7. Until then, bye for now. Thank you. Bye.
Break of dawn, come